كل الذين ينضموا للاستماع إلى راديو بلدي أول راديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا العرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 حتى 9 صباحا مع ليلى الحسيني في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan with Layla Al Husseini. Our call in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues with your host, Layla Al Husseini.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamis. Join me on the third Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be discussing some of the most important current political, economic, and social issues in my program, The Bridge, on Radio Baladi, on America's Voice of the Arabs, WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM. Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamis. Welcome again on U.S. Arab Radio on Radio Baladi. Our show this morning talks about a very important timely issue, Trump's first year in office and American Muslim activism. And with me this morning to discuss this important and timely topic is Mr. Hamza Khan, who is running as a candidate, actually, here in local elections in Maryland. He is a political activist and a democratic strategist, and he is the executive director of the Pluralism Project. Welcome to the show, Hamza.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us again on Radio Baladi, on U.S. Arab Radio. When we had you before on the show on this program, we were talking about forecasts and predictions regarding what America would look like under a Trump administration and what it would likely look like under a Hillary administration. So now, 1 year after Trump being in office, we would like to look back at what we have been discussing earlier, and we'll start by asking you the question, has this year been what you had expected, better than you had expected, worse than you had expected? If we were to compare that to your initial forecasts or predictions, what would you say?
I would have to say that no one would have expected the presidency to have turned into such a farce after 1 year of a Trump administration. Donald Trump has done probably more to harm the office of the presidency and the prestige of the executive of the United States than any occupant in its sole in its entire history. He might be the 45th president of the United States. Many people are hoping that he will not be the last president of the United States, given how ineffective his government has been so far. That being said, there has been one silver lining to the Trump administration's failure to lead the country, and that has been that everyday Americans have taken up the mantle of our democracy and have gone to the streets to fight for our country and its values. And we see that today in terms of the people running for Congress in the midterm elections of 2018. So overall, I would say my predictions, I think everything's been upended. No one is very much sure what will come next, but one thing is sure, we might be very well watching the demise of the Republican Party as we know it and the rise of more progressive politics in the coming years ahead.
What were some of the things that you felt like particularly where, you know, some things that you want to highlight to our listeners in this 1 year review that you feel like, you know, really had the worst effect, or things that you feel could have really been avoided altogether, especially when it comes to impacts on minorities, impacts on immigrants, and especially on the American Muslim or Arab American community more specifically?
So probably the thing that sticks out the most in my mind would be the successive Muslim bans, and again, they're overturning in court. Now, we know that the Muslim ban is currently being reviewed at the Supreme Court, but that doesn't change the fact that Donald Trump, very early into his regime in 2017, I think it was the first month in January, began to try and implement a campaign promise, which was to ban Muslims from entering the United States altogether. He attempted to do this by first banning several countries with Muslim-majority populations. When the court struck that down very quickly, he then tried to throw in a couple of countries that were not of Muslim background in order to make his ban more palatable to the courts, only to find the courts were not buying it and threw out his ban yet again. So that was probably the one moment in American history where we saw a president learn that his office had serious had serious limits on its power when it comes to entering and leaving the country. The Republican administration had continuously claimed that the president's rights were absolute when it came to controlling entry into the United States, only to find out that the U.S. court system is far more nimble and far more active when it comes to protecting the human rights of individuals trying to enter our country than the Trump administration could have possibly had imagined. So that was one thing that began the decline in the prestige of the White House. Then things went on into other directions. For a whole year, Donald Trump, obsessed with the legacy of America's only black president, Barack Hussein Obama, worked hard to try and destroy Mr. Obama's reputation in the media and destroy his signature accomplishment, Obamacare. Now, many have pointed out the flaws and the warts of Obamacare, but no one can argue that in essentially guaranteeing almost every American some form of health care, Mr. Obama had changed the way that America operated fundamentally. This was too much for Mr. Trump to handle emotionally, mostly because, as everyone is now familiar with, Mr. Trump has incredibly racist views towards individuals of darker skin color. He was quoted later on this past year, actually, this current year, he was quoted as calling certain countries as being outhouses, using much more colorful language than that, particularly the 54 countries of the African Union. So Mr. Trump failed over the course of the first year of his administration to try and upend and destroy Obamacare. And that drove him into, from what I understand, a serious despair at the fact that even though he controlled Congress through having a Republican majority and he being the head of the Republican Party, he was unable to destroy the legacy of one of the most progressive and healing presidents in American history, Barack Hussein Obama. So that was the next thing that really went wrong for this administration. Then to top things off, the administration decided to go on a tirade in terms of foreign policy. Trump's few foreign policy successes have come from the fact that as president, he is in charge of American foreign policy, by and large. While Congress might fund his initiatives, there are acts he can take that do not require Congress to really spend any money. For instance, after years of congressional mandate, the executive branch under Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem to be the capital of the state of Israel. This immediately led to protests across the Arab world and to a harming of relations between the United States and the dozens of Muslim-majority countries in the world, which believe that Jerusalem should be either a shared capital or the capital of a future Palestinian state, particularly East Jerusalem. This is important to note because even though there is both an East and West Jerusalem has always been a suburb of Israel and was more or less built in the years following the creation of the State of Israel. East Jerusalem, however, houses the old city of Jerusalem, where all the Islamic, Jewish, and Christian holy sites are located. So by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of particularly the State of Israel, Mr. Trump was declaring basically the peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians to be null and void and dead, and tried to then remake the peace process in his own image, which, of course, his image not being a particularly flattering one, has not worked out in any sense. Palestinians now refuse to accept the United States as a true arbiter of peace in the region, Russia is now on the rise in its influence in the Middle East, and China has found quite a few willing allies across the African continent after Mr. Trump's insult of that continent altogether in terms of trade.
Mm-hmm.
So by and large, America's foreign policy, the one notable success for Donald Trump when it came to foreign policy, the move to Jerusalem, has become an absolute disaster for the United States overall. Mm-hmm. Mr. Trump also went on a spending cut threes when it comes to the U.S. State Department, doing his best to cut as much funding to that department as possible and trying to reshape it into a very small operation as he pursues a course of turning the United States into a military shogunate that benefits, again, only those who wish to force America into more and more foreign conflicts without much reason or need. That has also been a disaster for American foreign policy because the United States was essentially hamstrung in being represented across the world. The Trump administration refused to have ambassadors appointed to most of the countries that we are allies and friends with, leading to a crisis of communication with our allies about what American foreign policy essentially is. Mm-hmm. Again and again, every nation that has allied with the United States has at one point or another since the rise of the Trump regime condemned Mr. Trump for his un-American behavior. It's quite ironic and astounding to think that foreign countries have to remind the United States of America, and particularly its executive, of what American values are, especially when one of those foreign countries is the current regime in Iran. Tehran, in several communiques, has condemned Mr. Trump's behavior as un-American, claiming that he has very little understanding of how government works and how democracy and foreign policy are carried out. Overall, the Trump administration has failed not only on the domestic front, as I pointed out, but also on the foreign policy front. He's made a mockery of what was one of the greatest countries in the history of humankind. And frankly, we are witnessing the decline of our republic as long as we allow for the Republican war machine to remain in office.
Just a few comments here before we go for our first commercial break. You know, basically, a lot of people will say thanks for the system of checks and balances in this country, that there is actually a system of checks and balances that can, stop some of these measures, especially when it comes to things like the Muslim travel ban, which, as you well know, and many of our listeners know, has been also home to a rhetorical battle. Some people will say, why do you even call it a Muslim ban? It's not meant to be a Muslim ban. And of course, other people will say, look at the countries that are, you know, subject to this particular ban. They are Muslim majority countries. So even rhetorically, there has been a rhetorical battle over what to call it. So these are some of the ongoing issues that have been evolving over the last year. And indeed, some of them, as you explained, did have a lot of negative implications. But as you also said, it has been a double-edged sword because it did inspire a lot of activism. And that would be the main focus of our discussion right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, please.
LIFE is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, LIFE for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to LIFE now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
Ziad brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937. Are you going to start a restaurant or a grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Najee Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Najee Abood now, 734-744-9796. New Concept Products and Design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New Concept Products and Design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Najee Abood, 734-744-9796.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now, 248-990-4247.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamiz. Join me on the third Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be discussing some of the most important current political, economic, and social issues in my program, The Bridge. On Radio Baladi, on America's Voice of the Arabs, WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM. Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamiz. We are discussing today an important and timely topic, Trump's first year in office and American Muslim activism. And with me this morning discussing this important topic is Mr. Hamza Khan, who is running as a candidate here in Maryland and who is actually a democratic strategist, a political activist, and the executive director of the Pluralism Project. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the overview of Trump's first year in office and some of the effects and implications it had. And one thing I actually want to bring up in light of what you have been saying before the break, Hamza, is the point about moral leadership. You know, there is the political aspect, the economic aspect, but there's also the moral and ethical aspect, especially when it comes to America's moral leadership as a superpower or as a major country and a major player in the world. Just to mention one quick example, the example you mentioned about the decision to approve of Jerusalem as a capital of Israel, and in President Trump's, State of the Union address, he said that these nations that voted against this decision are then considered, enemies, and money or the aid that's being sent to them, American aid, should be halted or stopped, and so on and so forth. You know, again, what is your take briefly before we go on to talk about our major topic of American Muslim activism today? Basically, this whole point about quote unquote moral leadership or America's image and foreign policy. What are some of the most important points or implications you should highlight here?
In terms of America's moral leadership, we have to remember a couple of things. When we're talking about the rest of the world, particularly Europe, moral leadership has never been much of a high priority for Europe, particularly because of its role as an imperialistic force that destroyed much of the Muslim world and Latin America and Africa as well, sub-Saharan Africa in particular, outside of the Muslim-majority areas. And that is an important thing to note when you think about America's role in the world. While many people point to the fact that America and Pax Americana, the idea of a broad American peace as the only superpower in the world, is very imperialistic in nature and is reminiscent in some ways of ancient Rome, the difference, of course, is that America didn't play a particularly active role in imperialism and colonialism, not to the degree, at least, to which the European powers did. America did, of course, try to colonize places like the Philippines, but that was for a very short amount of time in comparison to the level of destruction and human cost that came from, say, the British occupation of India, which led to millions upon millions of people dying well into the 20th century and during World War II in particular, when famine was throughout the subcontinent because of British mismanagement. Now, I bring this up because the United States has always acted instead as a sanctuary for countries to interact with one another, through the, one, the UN being located here in New York, and then also because we are a nation of immigrants. People could come here from across the world and build a life for themselves that they couldn't have anywhere else, and they could interact with ancient foes from other parts of the world as equals in the United States. A Polish person would live next to a Russian, a Pakistani lives next to an Indian, an Arab lives next to a Jew, and so on and so forth. And people become friends. They fall in love. They marry. They have a different look on the world because of America's role as that place where we could find a new beginning. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has essentially ended that period of American history in favor of white supremacy and white nationalism. And he has taken away the idea of America being the moral voice that would stand up to the imperialistic nature of Europe. Europe is to this day a very racist and unfriendly place to those who do not belong to a European white historical background. It's a very uncomfortable place if you are an Arab immigrant, if you are an immigrant of, say, French Indonesia or French Asia, for instance. You're not exactly very comfortable in Europe. You might be a little bit more comfortable in the United Kingdom because the British seem to have a bit more of a national soul and sense of guilty conscience for their crimes across the world over the past 200 years. Not so the rest of imperialistic Europe. And so the ending of America's role as that place where the moral voice of the moral high authority would come out and challenge Europe's destruction of our planet in multiple ways has been incredibly damning. Mm-hmm. People are trying to figure out what is the new center. Mm-hmm. People do not, across the world, do not want to line up with China or Russia. China might be a very good business partner, but no one likes the Chinese political culture, which is very repressive and very much focused on one-party rule. It's not a particularly communist party anymore, but it's just simply one-party rule. It's very totalitarian overall, though. Nobody likes the authoritarian hypocrisy of what Russia has become under Vladimir Putin. People wanted that third option of an open, free society and dialogue that America represented. And now that Donald Trump's regime has done all it can to delegitimize that voice, not just liberals, but even conservatives in foreign countries are trying to figure out what is the ideal we hold ourselves to now. Mm-hmm. That's been profound. Without American moral leadership and the clarity, the ethical clarity that America represented, not always acted as, but rather embodied as an ideal, there's a lot of trouble going forward for the United States and for the world.
Right. But we also, before going to the commercial break, talked about the whole first year of office for Trump being a double-edged sword. So we've been talking about all of these, you know, cons or all of these downsides, disadvantages, and obviously the implications they had both locally and internationally. But there's also another side, the silver lining in this cloud, which has been the positive side. And the positive side, I mean the level of community activism that emerged, especially among minorities, among groups of immigrants, among Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, and because you have been so much involved in American Muslim community activism, I want you to talk a little bit about that. I mean, what has really evolved? Let's take a wide view, and then after the second commercial break, we'll talk about specific examples. What has really emerged or transpired in terms of American Muslim activism locally here in the United States under the Trump administration so far?
Well, it's kind of hard to talk locally. We're talking about a community of between 3 to 6 million people who are spread out across a country of 310 million or 315 million people at this point. But I want to highlight one thing I forgot to mention before the break, which is the successive failures of Donald Trump to address immigration in the United States. He's tried with the Muslim ban to ban Muslims from entering, but overall, he's been unable to figure out a solution to the crisis of the Dreamers, who are, for your listeners to understand, a group of Americans who came here as young children, but did not come here under the proper immigration policies that were in place because of whatever reason, and have been, as a result, found themselves in limbo between official status as Americans and unofficially being here as immigrants. So that's been a huge challenge for him. Overall, we have 12 million or so immigrants in our country who do not have official status because of the very weird bureaucracy that is in place and is actually designed formerly by white supremacists and white nationalists of the Republican Party to prevent immigrants from entering the United States. So we have this huge backlog of people that needs to be addressed. And so far, this administration has failed again and again to find any sort of actual solution going forward that would allow these Americans to live in their country peaceably. And that has also become a very large thorn in the Republican Party's side and Donald Trump's regime's side, because the Trump regime realizes, as is the Republican Party, that Latinos and Hispanics, who make up a very large percentage of these individuals with unofficial immigrant background, those communities are no longer willing to sit on the sidelines and are politically engaged in a way that has not happened before and could spell the ruin of the white supremacist movement that is the Republican Party today. In fact, I'll go on air to say, inshallah, it will spell the end of the Republican Party. Now, coming back to the Muslim community, there's been a lot of interesting changes within the Muslim community in the past year. For a very long time, Muslim Americans felt that they only had two or three organizations that they could turn to in order to find their civic activism in the United States. One was an organization called CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations. Another one is a California-based group called the Muslim Public Affairs Council. And then there were one or two other groups across the country as well. Thanks to the Trump administration's ongoing battle against Muslim America and against Muslims across the world, more and more Muslims have chosen to mainstream themselves into political life. That has led to, just in Maryland, about a dozen Muslims running for office. And I'm sure if your viewers weren't aware, the Pluralism Project played a substantive role in that, because we took on training as many as 30 Muslims last year to run for office in Maryland. Additionally, it seems that we're on track to have more than a dozen Muslims run for Congress across the United States. Largely Muslim Americans born in this country and belonging to a separate generation than the immigrant generation that dominated. The immigrant generation of Muslim Americans, I should point out, has always been a minority of the Muslim American experience. They've never been a majority. 45% of Muslims in this country are of African American heritage, of black skin, who were brought here as slaves during the slave trade years, 400 years ago, and going on until the end of slavery and Jim Crow not too long ago. That being said, the immigrant class of Muslims who came to the United States, particularly from the Middle East and South Asia, because of their economic clout coming here as white-collar immigrants, dominated the Muslim community for the past two decades, almost obliterating Muslim America's organic network of community organizations in favor of more immigrant-heavy networks controlled by their generation. Now that generation has begun to die off and their age has kicked in, leading to younger Muslim Americans stepping into the fold and reforming Muslim institutions and ending years of bigotry and racism led by the immigrant community against particularly black-skinned Muslims across the U.S. That healing process has come largely because of the Trump administration's ongoing hatred of Muslims overall. That's number one. Number two, another great thing has been that mainstream organizations have realized that Muslims are no longer the red-headed stepchild of American politics and have worked hard to bring Muslims into the political atmosphere. That being said, that has happened more in areas where Democrats are in the minority or almost in the plurality, rather than areas where Democrats are in the majority. For instance, here in Montgomery County, Maryland, where I live, about 10% of our county, 100,000 people, are Muslim, yet not a single Muslim has been elected to office here since 2006. That has been largely a deliberate attempt by political elites to keep Muslims out of political office. In the last election, for instance, only 17% of people voted. Montgomery County is home to four of America's top 10 diverse cities. 51% of the population are immigrants and minorities. Not a single Muslim is elected. We have Muslims who speak over 80 languages in this county. And we have the largest Ethiopian population outside of Addis Ababa in Montgomery County as well, well as about 22 Islamic congregations.
So let me stop here for a commercial break, Hamza, and we're going to come back to talk about the Muslims running for office, both at the local election level, by that I mean in Maryland, and also at this, you know, the national level in the United States as well. We will come back to this important conversation right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, please.
When it comes to reproductive medicine, IVF Michigan Fertility Centers are the recognized leaders. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and five other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. As a founding member of IVF Michigan Fertility Centers, Dr. Nicholas Shama is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. Dr. Shama has performed over 10,000 IVF cases and has helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. American board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology and infertility, Dr. Nicholas Shama is a very caring, compassionate, expert physician that understands not only the medical but also the emotional toil of infertility on his patients. When it's time, get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio. Call toll-free 855-952-9600, 855-952-9600.
Life is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to Life now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
بدأناه معكم وعهدناكم على أن نستمر بمزيد من المتعة والعروض الحصرية على قناتي زي ألوان وزي أفلام. زي ألوان هي أول وأكبر قناة مسلسلات عربية هندية في أمريكا. أضخم الإنتاجات، مسلسلات حصرية، ومع زي أفلام فأنتم على موعد مع مغامرة جديدة كل يوم لاكتشاف سحر بوليوود. تابعوا حصريا قناتي زي ألوان وزي أفلام الآن في أمريكا على ديش نتورك وسلينج تي في.
أصوات زمزم الواقع على 24065 أورشيد ليك في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز ترحب بالجالية العربية والكلدانية. تنزيلات كبيرة على عموم المواد الغذائية في يوم الأربعاء من كل أسبوع. لا تنسوا فريش كاري أوت، جميع أنواع المعجنات، وأيضا صواني الكامبو المشكلة والصمون الحار، لحوم حلال الجالية العربية والإسلامية الملحمة بإدارة قصاب الجالية المعروف سلوان جربوع. زوروهم على 24065 أورشيد ليك في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز، أو اتصلوا بهم على 248-476-0300. أسواق زمزم للمذاق عنوان. لجميع طلباتكم اتصلوا على 248-476-0300. أسواق زمزم للمعامل الراقية وكرم الضيافة. عنوان.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamiz. Join me on the third Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be discussing some of the most important current political, economic, and social issues in my program, The Bridge. On Radio Baladi, on America's Voice of the Arabs, WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM. Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamiz, and we are discussing today a very important and timely topic, Trump's first year in office and American Muslim activism. Before we go on to resume our conversation with our guest today, Mr. Hamza Khan, we do have a caller online, so we'd like to take Mr. Jerry Habba. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sahar Kamiz. Good morning to you, and good morning to your guest, Mr. Hamza Khan. Jerry Habba with you. Dr. Sahar Kamiz, thank you for taking my call, and your topic is very important because do need a lot of politicians from the Arab, Muslim and Christian, plus the Chaldean. And the, I want to thank Mr. Hamza for his activities as a politician. We need it. My question will have two parts. Part one, Mr. Hamza, what do you think about Miss Rashida Tlaib, the one she tried to take the place of Mr. Jan Kanyer on the 13th district? That's one. And what do you think about her? The other question is, if an example, an Iraqi Chaldean Christian from Sterling Heights or any part of suburb Detroit tried to run for the office, what do you think, Mr. Hamza, should the all the community, Muslim, Christian, Arab, they should vote for the qualification if they think this person, he has the talent to serve all the community? So I would love your answer, and thank you, and God bless you, and thank you, Dr. Sahar, for taking my call.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling, and have a good day. Thanks. Okay, so Hamza, you heard the question. It has two parts. Would you like to answer, please?
Sure. So let's talk about Rashida Tlaib for a second. For those of you who are not familiar with Rashida's background who are listening in right now, Mrs. Tlaib is a former member of the Michigan House of Representatives from Michigan's 6th and I believe also the 12th district. She was term limited and no longer is a member of the House of Representatives and now is running for Congress. She is a fantastic candidate. I think that she's running a really strong campaign for Congress, and she's one of the people that we have to look to as a leader coming up in this election cycle. I think that she's definitely going to give people a run for their money. She's familiar with public policy from a personal level because of the fact that she was a state representative for such a long time. And she's represented Dearborn while she was a state representative, so she's definitely got a local flair to her that's going to be very useful. She's also the daughter, as I recall, of Palestinian immigrants. But unlike many Palestinian immigrants to the United States, she came from a working family, meaning her parents didn't come here as white-collar immigrants. They came here as blue-collar immigrants. That means that she's inculcated with progressive values from the point of view that standing up for a higher minimum wage, maybe I think a $15 minimum wage is something that she will likely support, is very important because she's lived the life of a working-class American. She understands the issues from a very personal point of view, and that makes her very relatable for a lot of people living in Michigan. I would handicap that race right now to be a toss-up in terms of the Democratic primary, but Rashida is known to have a very large national network, including a very large group of supporters from staffers on Capitol Hill. I would expect that she'd be able to raise a good amount of money for her race, and not only that, because of her credentials as a blue-collar progressive Democrat, she could really put that race into play and win it. So that would be my thoughts about Rashida Tlaib, rather. If Rashida's listening, salamu alaikum, wishing you well and good luck with your race. So that's on that. Now, the second part of the question, Sahar, if you could remind your listeners what that was, since I kind of went on for a bit here.
His question was about, for example, if someone from, let's say, an Iraqi, Kaldani, Christian background is running for office in one of the local or, you know, state elections, you know, should this person be supported also by the wider community, including Muslims and non-Muslims, based on his or her credentials and talents?
Well, this is, I think, an important point for the Arab community to discuss. I am not a member of the Arab American community. My parents are originally from South Asia, and I was born and raised in Maryland. So I don't really have much to say on this except to offer this thought. The Muslim world, the traditional Muslim world, was far more cosmopolitan and diverse before the rise of Arab nationalism and its complement of Iranian and Pakistani nationalisms. And the result from this has been unfortunate, where there has been an ostracizing and a level of discord between Muslim Arabs and Arab Christians. Particularly, many Khaldani Christians have resettled the United States as refugees because of the ongoing atrocities committed against them in Iraq by extremists inspired by Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and other anti-Islamic organizations that claim to act in the name of Muslims. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a healing, I would say, within the greater Arab diaspora in the United States between Arab Muslims, Arab mm-hmm. Christians, and yes, even Arab Jews. Many Arab Jews have suffered ostracization because of events out of their control, particularly in 1948 and 1967. And so until the Arab American community can find a way to come to peace with that, there are going to be a lot of challenges for them to deal with. So I can't really comment on that.
Mm-hmm. But I think you already commented in a very good way, Hamza, because I think the whole idea, and you know, in light of the question itself, really should be the credentials, right, of the candidate, regardless of his or her, you know, ethnic, racial, religious background. You know, what is the talents and the credentials and the abilities of the candidate, and what he or she can bring to the office, right?
Yes, exactly, and that's where I was going to go next. Look, it doesn't matter if someone happens to be an Arab-American. If they're a terrible candidate for office, they're a terrible candidate for office. Mm. Here in Maryland, we once had an elected official who claimed to be of the Muslim faith who ended up being a very ineffective elected official and was voted out the next term. That's important to keep in mind because they depend very heavily on raising money from Muslims to fund their election campaign. And, you know, if you're not an effective... following that person, booting from office, we haven't had a single Muslim elected again from Montgomery County, Maryland. So it's important to note that if the person doesn't really have the credentials, doesn't really have the right makeup of views and politics, and I would say at this point most Arab Americans have progressive politics. In the past, many Arab Americans were stalwarts of the Republican Party, supporting Ronald Reagan, supporting George Bush, mostly on the financial reasons. They did not believe in a welfare state. They believe strongly in keeping their own money and using it for their own ends rather than benefiting all of society. That's changed over in the last generation thanks to the ongoing challenges from racism in the United States. Many Arab American young people have realized that we are a part of a larger society and we need to be engaged in that society regardless of our background. So someone who fits that profile, who has progressive politics, who believes in liberal values and wants to see an America that flourishes for all, that's the person you should support regardless of their background. That being
Absolutely.
Said, American politics is tribalistic. So if there Absolutely. Happens to be an Arab-American candidate who fits that bill versus someone else, it would make sense for Arab Americans to get behind the Arab Americans.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and again, it's the character and the personality, you know, what you are running on, what is your, you know, promise for the community, whether you can deliver that promise or not. I think that should be the key factor, not the person's religious or even ethnic and racial background at the end of the day. And that reminds me, in the 2 minutes we have before going to the next commercial break, that you yourself are actually running as a candidate. And I'd like to hear a little bit about what you are running for. For, and why are you running for this particular position?
Well, I was going to focus more on other candidates running, but really briefly, I'm running for state delegate in Maryland's 15th district, which is the western part of Montgomery County, Maryland. I lived and grew up in the district for 20 years. I'm a progressive Democrat who's a strong supporter of labor and a strong supporter of the environment, as well as a champion for our local public school system. I'm running on a platform focused on education. The need for us to invest in school construction dollars. We have one of the fastest growing education systems in the country, but we are lagging behind in support for building new schools in our region. In fact, in my district, there is one elementary school that hasn't been rebuilt, at least since the Eisenhower administration, as I understand it. So that's kind of a big problem in an area like ours. I also value diversity a great deal. Look, like I talked about earlier, in my local area, in the last local election of the in a county that's 2-1 Democrat, only 17% of people voted. And that means that the 83% that were left out were largely the 51% of Montgomery County residents who are of immigrant and minority background. That's not how you run a democracy. That very same year, Tunisia, an Arab country, overthrew its authoritarian government and had its first free election, and 66% of people went out and voted. That's with Al-Qaeda and ISIS working together to murder people running for office and for voting. So if you can have that going on in Tunisia, I'm not sure why Montgomery County, Maryland couldn't fare better. It has a lot to do with the fact that the political class did not want turnout to be higher.
Well, I wish you certainly best of luck with your race, Hamza. And I really wish you all the best in your efforts in this regard. And we're going to be back again to this discussion right after this commercial break. So stay tuned, please.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now 248-990-4247.
أصوات زمزم الواقع على 24065 أورشيد ليك في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز ترحب بالجالية العربية والكلدانية. تنزيلات كبيرة على عموم المواد الغذائية في يوم الأربعاء من كل أسبوع. لا تنسوا فريش كاري أوت جميع أنواع المعجنات وأيضا صواني الكامبو المشكلة والصمبون الحار. لحوم حلال الجالية العربية والإسلامية الملحمة بإدارة قصاب الجالية المعروف سلوان جربوع. زوروهم على 24065 أورشيد ليك في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز أو اتصلوا بهم على 248-476-0300. أسواق زمزم للمذاق عنوان. لجميع طلباتكم اتصلوا على 248-476-0300. أسواق زمزم للمعاملة الراقية وكرم الضيافة عنوان.
بدأناه معكم وعهدناكم على أن نستمر بمزيد من المتعة والعروض الحصرية على قناتي زي ألوان وزي أفلام. زي ألوان هي أول وأكبر قناة مسلسلات عربية هندية في أمريكا. أضخم الإنتاجات، مسلسلات حصرية، ومع زي أفلام فأنتم على موعد مع مغامرة جديدة كل يوم لاكتشاف سحر بولي. تابعوا حصرياً قناتي زي ألوان وزي أفلام الآن في أمريكا على ديش نتورك وسلينج تي في.
قشات ميديترينيان ماركت بإدارة سهر قشات وأولاده يرحبون بالجالية العربية والكلدانية. جميع أنواع المواد الغذائية، ألبان طازجة، الكرزات والبهارات الطازجة. داخل الأسواق مطعم ميديترينيان شيش كباب يقدم يوميا جميع أنواع الكباب، المقبلات العربية العراقية وصواني الكامبو المميزة. تفتح الأسواق من 8 إلى 9 مساء من الاثنين وحتى السبت، ومن 8 صباحا إلى 9 مساء يوم الأحد. تقع الأسواق على 2839 North Western Highway في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز. لحوم حلال للجالية الإسلامية. لطلباتكم من المطعم call 248-538-7855. That is 248-538-7855. قشة ميديترينيان ماركت، خدمة متميزة ومعاملة راقية.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamiz. Join me on the third Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be discussing some of the most important current political, economic, and social issues in my program, The Bridge, on Radio Baladi, on America's Voice of the Arabs, WNZK 690 a.m. and WDMV 700 AM. Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Sahar Kamiz, and we're discussing today Trump's first year in office and the American Muslim activism in the United States. And my guest today is Mr. Hamza Khan, a democratic strategist and a political activist. We have a caller on hold, Mr. Jamal. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Saha. Good morning, Mr. Khan.
Good morning.
First of all, you know, this is a great discussion of local issues and national issues that deals with the status of our country here, even though we are from so many different parts of the world, but this is the country we call country right now. The problem with the Muslim world is that we are, you know, talking, Dr. Khamis, about the Muslims in general, and in particular, our problem as Americans here with the Muslim countries doesn't represent really the majority of the Muslim world. The Muslim world is 1.6 billion, and we're only talking about few parts of the world where, in particular, Muslim Arabs, you know, fighting each other and producing extremists. Views. Also, some of the Muslims in, let's say, Afghanistan, a few parts of Pakistan, supported by Arab Islamic, you know, petrol dollars.
Yeah. So, what is your question, Jamal? If I can just ask you, what is the question for Mr. Hamza?
Okay, Mr. Hamza. So here we are when we say Muslim Americans. And Trump affecting, you know, the Muslims in general. How you can describe that, you know, President Trump is all targeting, you know, Muslims instead of targeting, you know, area where there is a kind of, we can say, a danger for the American interest.
I got your point. Thank you so much, Mr. Jamal. Thank you for calling. Thank you. So I think, Hamza, his question is like basically we're focusing here on the American Muslim community specifically, but I think Mr. Jamal's question is, you know, the damage has been far reaching beyond the American Muslim community. So your comment briefly on that, please.
Yeah, I mean, there's no argument here whatsoever that Donald Trump's actions have been damaging to the entire American Republic in every facet of it, to be honest with you. So I think that the caller and I agree on that point for sure, that there's a lot of damage that's been done by the Trump administration in many different facets of the American life. Just this morning, actually, the New York Times is reporting that the very questionable man who asked to lead the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is now being investigated by the FBI and by the federal government for making illegal support to several corporations. So corruption is really one of the major byproducts of the Trump administration. We have a lot of examples of soft corruption. There was another report last night that came out about how corrupt the presidential inaugural committee was and how much money was kicked back to close friends of the president's inner circle. So, you know, that's just another example of just how horrible the Trump administration has been so far in leading by a moral example. By and large, Donald Trump has proven himself to be an immoral man, an unethical creature, and frankly a disgrace to the United States and probably to humanity at this point. So I think the caller agrees with you and I that there are a lot of problems beyond just Muslim Americans.
Absolutely. Just to clarify for our listeners, just the reason we focused on the American Muslim community in particular is because our guest this morning, Mr. Hamza Khan himself, comes from this background. He's an American Muslim and he's involved in local politics and activism, which has been the focus of our discussion. But definitely, we understand that the issues at hand here are far-reaching beyond just the American Muslim community, for sure. Hamza, we have a little time left, so I want to quickly focus on a few important points we did not have time to discuss. First of all, you mentioned the Pluralism Project. If you can briefly tell our listeners, what is this project really all about?
Sure. So the Pluralism Project is a hybrid PAC, a political action committee that's focused on electing Americans of diverse narrative to public office. In particular, this past week, we endorsed five Americans of diverse heritage running for office, including an Arab American woman running for Michigan, Fairuz Saad, who happens to be a national security expert, a Pakistani-American healthcare analyst running in Illinois named Neil Muhammad, who's running for Congress in Illinois' 16th district, an Iranian American named Kia Hamadanchi, running in California's 45th district, and two Americans of other immigrant backgrounds, one who was the daughter of a Holocaust survivor, Chrissy Houlihan, and a Ecuadorian immigrant running in Florida named Debbie Mercasel Powell. So we've been focusing on doing as much as we can to empower communities of immigrant background and of diverse heritage to run for office in the U.S. In Maryland, we took on the project last year of training 30 Muslims to run for office, given the fact that Maryland's Muslim community has been deliberately excluded by the Democratic Party from political office for a very long time. The Democrats dominate the state of Maryland. Very few Muslims have been allowed to run for office. Many Muslims have been sabotaged while trying to run for office in Maryland. We wanted to address that issue as quickly as possible, so we spent a lot of effort in empowering Muslims in the state of Maryland. I wanted to go over quickly the races that are of keen interest right now across the U.S. that everyone of Muslim American background should be paying attention to. Is Illinois' 16th district, where we have Neil Muhammad running for Congress. He happens to be a Pakistani American, running against a moderate GOP opponent who 90% of the time still votes with the Trump regime's agenda of hate as a Republican. And he would be a very strong candidate. He's likely to prevail in his campaign to become a Democratic nominee. That would make him the first Pakistani-American Democratic nominee for Congress in the United States. That would make him a very, very influential person, even if he doesn't win his general. Kia Hamadanchi, of Iranian background, running in Orange County in California's 45th district, is a race of key interest to the Iranian-American community. He is a six-year veteran of Capitol Hill as a Senate staffer. He understands the Hill very well. He's a native-born son of Orange County. His family has lived there since the rise of the Khomeiniist government in Iran. And he's likely internal polling is showing him running a very strong race. California has an interesting system of doing their elections, so you end up having the top two on either side of the ballot going up into the general election in November. So he's likely to prevail and end up on a general ballot in November. And if he wins there, he'd be taking out another Republican stalwart, Mimi Walters, who is no friend to basically any immigrant community. She's probably one of the worst members of the House by far in terms of being a Republican. Another really important race to watch would be Tahir Javed's race in Texas's 29th district. Now, Tahir Javed is a self-made man, Pakistani-American immigrant, not born and raised in the U.S., and this is really important. His Twitter following is over 77,000 people. He's a successful CEO who runs a very large healthcare company called Riceland Healthcare, and he has no major endorsements from local Democrats, but this is an interesting race he's running in Texas's 29th district for Congress.
Right. And you mentioned also the Fairuz running in Michigan. A lot of our listeners are actually in Michigan, so you also mentioned her running in Michigan, and I think we are running out of time with our great discussion this morning. It's very interesting that the Pluralism Project, based on what you just described now, Hamza, is not just focusing on local candidates, but also on state and national candidates and empowering people of different backgrounds to actually get the fair chance that they have in order to present the voices and to present different unique perspectives, which are much needed for American democracy today. I'm afraid we are running out of time and coming to the end of our discussion. I would like to thank our guest this morning, Mr. Hamza Khan, for all you are doing for the community. Thank you so much, Hamza, and good luck with your own race.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, and thanks to all our listeners. Good morning. Thank you, and have a great day. Thank you for being with us today. Thank you, and goodbye.